It is a weird world that we live in now where the man who killed Osama bin Laden has been put on a no-fly list, at least from Delta Airlines, and the Taliban is now in control of the lives of Americans left behind in Afghanistan by our government that we are now apparently negotiating with, begging to let Americans off the ground and apparently giving them things in return every time they release one of these hostages, which, of course, the White House and Anthony Blinken said is not accurate. They're not hostages. Well, if you can't leave the country and you can't get on a plane, are you a hostage? If you're being held in a country against your will, are you a hostage? Yes. Let me tell you, though, about Delta Airlines real quick and how messed up the world is that we live in right now. Up is down and down is up. Left is right. Right is left. Right. All right. So Delta has banned the man who actually killed Osama bin Laden, that ex-Navy SEAL, after he sent out an anti-mask tweet. The ex-Navy SEAL who killed Osama bin Laden, and everybody knows, including Delta Airlines, that he's the guy that killed Osama bin Laden. They know it because the reason why they banned him is because of the picture that was with his tweet online. So they can't say, oh, is it, you know, like, hey, we didn't know it was the guy that killed Osama bin Laden, right? No, they did this on purpose. They knew exactly who they were banning from flying on Delta Airlines moving forward. The ex-Navy SEAL who killed Osama bin Laden and bragged on Twitter about not wearing a, quote, dumb AWS mask on a Delta flight has been banned from the airline. I just got banned from Delta for posting a picture. Wow, Robert O'Neill, 44, tweeted out. The move comes a day after he tweeted a smiling maskless selfie from his seat with a caption, I'm not a blank. Many of O'Neill's Twitter followers took the post as a direct dig at the only other person in the photo, an older man wearing a U.S. Marine Corps hat and mask, sitting across from him with his mask on. A former Navy SEAL Team 6 member later took the photo down at the urging of his wife, he claimed, and also insisted he always wears a mask and that the tweet was a joke. Now, you and I both know that when they walk by, even if you have your mask down below your nose, they freak out and yell at you, right? I've dealt with that, right? They'll yell at two-year-olds and kick them off the plane. I think everybody knows that this ex-Navy SEAL was not flying without a mask the entire time. He took a picture, and he took the picture, and you can actually see the flight attendant standing directly behind him. It's like she went past, he took the picture, and I'm sure he put his mask back on. There's no reports he didn't have his mask on during the entire flight. You get my point. He was sending out a tweet. Many of his Twitter followers also attacked him, right, saying, how dare you do this? You're putting people's lives at risk. He actually put out a statement saying, the former Navy SEAL Team 6 member later took the photo down at the urging of his wife and claimed also and insisted he always wears a mask and the tweet was a joke. Quote, this was not a dig at the Marine behind me. I love Marines, he wrote in another tweet linking to an article in the Post. Delta confirmed, when they were reached for comment, that the man who killed Osama bin Laden is no longer welcome aboard. Part of every customer's commitment prior to traveling on Delta is the requirement to acknowledge our updated travel policies, which include wearing a mask, the airline said in a statement. Failure to comply with our mask-wearing mandate can result in losing the ability to fly Delta in future flights. Now, there's no indication, there's nothing that Delta said that he took his mask off during the flight, didn't wear it. That didn't happen. He took a damn picture. The Montana native fired three shots into the Al-Qaeda leader's head during the May 11th raid on his Pakistan hideout. Now, I want you to think about Delta Airlines. Delta Airlines is an airline that was affected by the 9/11 attacks. They use airplanes, right? This is the dude that killed the man that did the attack. This is the man who risked his life to make air travel literally safer. And Delta Airline, because of a picture, because of a joke, with no reports or accusation that he didn't wear his mask on the flight, because the appearance that he didn't wear a mask on the flight has now been banned from flying on Delta Airlines. So next time you book your flight, you might want to think twice about booking on Delta, right? You might want to push back on that. Just think about a company that is willing to treat the man who killed Osama bin Laden this way when clearly he made a mistake, took it down, and it was a joke. No, you don't joke about masks. We'll ban you from flying on Delta Airlines, even the guy that killed Osama bin Laden. He fought back at Delta Airlines saying, man, glad we weren't on a Delta flight when we went to go kill Osama bin Laden. It's a pretty good point if you ask me. Which brings me to another point. Trapped in Afghanistan. Those left behind are grappling with the unresponsive U.S. government and dimming hope of escape. An Afghan interpreter who worked alongside the U.S. during the war said he made three trips to the airport in Kabul during the chaotic withdrawal last month and failed attempts to escape the country with his wife and not one, not two, but three different children. The last time was when a suicide bomb attack killed more than 170 Afghan and 13 U.S. troops at the airport gate. His family was unharmed, but they remained trapped and fearing for their lives in the Taliban-controlled country. That is painful for me, that I have worked for 4 years, not one, not two. I worked for 4 years. They evacuated smugglers. They evacuated terrorists. They evacuated beggars. They evacuated street boys. But we are the ones who should be eligible, said the interpreter, whose name the Washington Times has agreed to conceal to protect him from Taliban retaliation. We are the ones left behind. This is very painful for us. By the way, you notice he used the word they got out, evacuated terrorists. More and more people left on the ground are saying that's true. The terrorists were able to get on the airfields early on because the Taliban maybe let them go through the gates on purpose. And we evacuate them to the rest of the world so they can then be terrorists. The interpreter, by the way, was among tens of thousands of Afghan allies and more than 100 Americans. Now we're saying that number is probably closer to 200 Americans left in Afghanistan when the final U.S. troops departed the war-torn country just before midnight on August the 30th. Their day-to-day existence is uncertain as President Biden and the State Department grapple with their next move. They're grappling with their next move instead of actually acting to get these people out. Think about that as well. And one of the largest evacuations in history. That's how they want you to believe things went down. The U.S. says, well, we got a bunch of people out, so it should be good enough. And hey, you know what? We have this deadline of August 31st, and you know we're only America. It's not like we could move the deadline, change the deadline, or start blowing up Taliban people or Al-Qaeda people, right, in the country to prove to them that, hey, we're still in charge and back off. We're going to get all our damn people out or you're probably going to die. The Pentagon, by the way, estimates that only 7,000 of the 6,000 Afghans evacuated had actually applied under the State Department's Special Immigrant Visa Program designed for interpreters and others who helped the U.S. war effort escape retribution from the Taliban. So we were evacuating the wrong people. No big deal, right? Just evacuating the wrong people. The interpreter who spoke with the Times said he complied and compiled the required paperwork for his SIV application just months before the withdrawal. His application was in the beginning stages of processing at the U.S. as the U.S. announced Operation Allies Refuge. His paperwork remained, of course, stuck in the bureaucracy in the State Department backlog when the Taliban seized control. Weeks before the U.S. withdrew, a clash between Afghan security forces and the Taliban fighters destroyed the interpreter's home in a rural province. The interpreter fled to Kabul with his family and took refuge at a shelter for internally displaced people. They fled the shelter after it became too dangerous to stay. Staff said the Taliban were overrunning the city. With few options, the interpreter decided to brave the Taliban checkpoints and reach the airport. Thousands of desperate Afghans inundated the streets outside the gate, he said, and U.S. troops were unable to parse the crowd for those eligible to resettle in the U.S. under the SIV program, but we were getting terrorists out. Despite the risk he had taken by working alongside the U.S., he was just another face of the crowd and chaos at the airport. It was an emergency situation. They couldn't compare which one is eligible with which one is not, he said. So we just decided if you got through the gates and maybe Al-Qaeda and the Taliban were letting certain terrorists through the gates on purpose, which is what he's claiming now, we just got him out of the country because it was an emergency situation. Which brings us to another point. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North is now demanding answers on why did we give away the Bagram Air Base? This wasn't the Trump administration that came up with this idea. This was the Biden administration. Colonel North is a guy that understands military operations. Look at his history. He's a guy that understands covert operations. He's a retired U.S. Marine colonel, and he is now pressing the Biden administration for accountability for all of the Gold Star families that he's talked to have lost their 13 service members during the U.S. withdrawal in Afghanistan and also all the Americans left behind. Now, he's looking at this from a clearly military standpoint. Why would you give up Bagram Air Base, ever, for that matter? Why would you give up that base before you had every American out? In fact, he's arguing, forget the Kabul airport, right, which was not an airport that was really secure. I think we've clearly seen that. The Bagram Air Base should have never been given up until we had every American out, and we should have had military personnel there, including airplanes, right? Bombers, fighter jets, helicopters, the whole thing, that if the Taliban did do something stupid, we could blow the hell out of them immediately from Bagram Air Base. It was basically a safety precaution. We should have controlled it till the very end. Now, you're going to hear Anthony Blinken. I'm going to let that play because I think it's important for you to hear what Anthony Blinken has to say, Secretary of State. And then you're going to hear Oliver North having a conversation with Maria Bartiromo over at Fox Business. And I want you to hear what he had to say about the idea that we actually purposely gave away Bagram Air Base when we desperately needed Bagram Air Base for overwatch, for air superiority, for security for Americans.
With regard to the composition of this government or interim government, I noted the fact that it certainly does not meet the test of inclusivity, and it includes people who have very challenging track records.
Now, I love how he says that, right? Blinken there is saying, well, okay, we don't approve of the new Taliban government, and we, you know, they have a track record of killing a bunch of people and beheading people and pulling out fingernails and hanging them from trees and from cranes and all of these types of things. And we know they kill innocent women and they beat women and they kill babies and they force people into sex slavery and tie people up. And, you know, the list goes on. So we're not surprised that they're not having women in their government, you know, and they have a shady record. Well, if you knew all this, why the hell did you give up Bagram Air Base? If you knew the Taliban was like this, which is what you just admitted, why did you trust them to protect Americans and security at the airport? Because the Biden administration, and this is not up for debate, it is a fact, they had the opportunity to keep all of Kabul. And we said, or excuse me, the Biden administration said, State Department said, Anthony Blinken said, no, we don't want to be in charge of Kabul and at the end. No, you guys, the Taliban, can be in charge. We just want to control the airport. That's it. Did not a single damn person think, well, hold on a second. What if the Taliban like puts up checkpoints like they've had a history of doing throughout? I mean, anyone knows the Taliban knows how to shut down roadways and access ways. Like that's one of their things they do, right? When they shut off supplies to cities, when they want to shut down a city, that's the first thing they do. Did not a single person go, hold on a second, guys, do you really want to trust the Taliban, a terrorist organization that's been killing Americans for the last 20 years, to protect Americans in a quick flip, reversal of roles, and allow Americans just freely walk down the street to the airport, and Afghans that helped us walk down the road, and they're not going to mess with them, they're not going to screw with them, they're not going to kill them, they're not going to torture them, they're not going to try to grab them? Well, of course, people said this doesn't matter, right? No, that doesn't matter. But we know, and we have now Blinken on record saying we knew these were bad guys, and we did it anyway. We gave up Bagram Air Base anyway.
Challenging track records, inclusivity? That was U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken admitting that the new Taliban government, which the Biden administration relied on to evacuate Americans from Afghanistan after Kabul's fall, may not be trustworthy after all. My next guest says the White House knew this all along and has been lying to the American people. Joining me right now is Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. He is a decorated military veteran who was embedded with 66 different units over 17 years. It is an honor to have you here this morning, sir. Thanks very much for being here, Colonel North.
Maria, good to be with you. Wonderful interview you did with two very important people.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much. You are in touch with the National Resistance Front in Afghanistan. I want to ask you your thoughts on what's going on now. What can you tell us in terms of new information, U.S. citizens, allies? Are they being held hostage? Because I know, sir, we didn't just leave Americans on the ground in Afghanistan. We left Brits, Canadians, Ukrainians, Europeans, and other allies that have helped us along the way for 20 years.
I spent yesterday, Maria, as you and I talked, with veterans of this war, Gold Star families, those who had been there when this whole incredibly aborted operation took place. And everybody wants one thing, and that's accountability. hopefully there's going to be accountability as to why they gave away Bagram, one of the best military bases in the world. In fact, I know the engineer who built it. The Russians started it. We finished it. It was one of the finest military operations installations in the world. There was intelligence collection. There was a main base, easily defended, all the kinds of surveillance you would need to protect it with a relatively modest number of troops. Why did they give it away? It wasn't taken by the Taliban. It was given to the Taliban. And you showed some of the footage of the cash that was left there, the $84 billion worth of weapons, most of which were stored at Bagram. All of that left behind, none of it destroyed. When you look at that cachet that we gave to the Taliban, and it's not just the Taliban, it's ISIS, it's Al-Qaeda, it's the Haqqani organization, they are all one. And right at this very minute, Maria, they are sitting in the presidential palace in downtown Kabul, going through information that the GRU from Russia and the Communist Chinese Intelligence Service is helping to collect on targeting those who are our allies. And as you pointed out, we still have NATO allies with people left behind. The promise was, at the very beginning of this, no Americans left behind. It was a blatant lie. And there's so much anger out there. You know, today's Sunday. In the Lord's Prayer, it says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Well, I'm not there yet, and neither are they. And they want accountability. And when Blinken goes up to the Capitol tomorrow, the building right behind me, when he comes up to the Capitol tomorrow, I hope that Congressman McCaul and people like Mike Waltz, let me just very quickly describe, I'm on the phone with Mike Waltz. I'm on the other phone with a U.S. Army lieutenant colonel inside the wall at Hamid Karzai International Airport. And we're trying to get a group of about 160 American citizens, green card holders, and SIVs. People hold a special immigrant visa. They've worked with us over the 20 years. And it's right outside. The lieutenant colonel says, if I could reach through this gate, I could touch the bus that they're on. And Mike and I were on the phone, and he called the White House. And Mike got the White House general counsel, who said, I've talked to the president. It's going to be open. And 5 minutes later, there's one of these phony calls that there's going to be an imminent attack. Everybody spread out, get away from the gates. That kind of thing happened dozens of times. And it wasn't a real attack. In fact, the real attack that killed the last 13 Americans killed in this long war, they had no warning coming for them.
You know, you hear what Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North saying there. These guys just didn't want to open the gate. Because the Taliban said, we control the area, you guys can open the gate. We gave that up. We gave up Bagram. We gave up air superiority. We gave up what we needed to do to protect and defend Americans. Remember, the Trump plan was very clear. The Trump plan was, if you screw with America or our assets, we will blow you to hell. It was actually that simple. We know that was the plan. The plan was laid out. Now, Anthony Blinken now is trying to claim that the Trump administration did not leave an Afghanistan withdrawal plan. We also now know that is a lie, and we have the proof that it is a lie. I want to play for you the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, claiming that the Trump administration didn't leave any plan for Afghanistan. Now, I'm going to prove for you that this is a lie. And I hope that every one of you that's hearing this will make sure you grab our podcast and share this information, because a lot of people need to hear the fact check of this administration deliberately and purposely lying, implying that the plan that they inherited, they had no ability to change, alter, or do it differently, because in fact they did change and alter the plan drastically, which cost Americans their lives, which left 10% of Americans behind. Their words, not mine. And this idea that the Trump administration did not leave a plan is an absolute and utter lie. Now, in front of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, a Democrat asked the question of Anthony Blinken. Clearly, they set this up in advance. Clearly, they knew the narrative they were going to try to push, which is this is all Trump's fault, not our fault, to get out of it. Take a listen.
Secretary Blinken, when you came into office on January 20th, we were committed to pulling everyone out of Afghanistan within 3 months, by May 1st. Did the Trump administration leave on your desk pile of notebooks as to exactly how to carry out that plan? Did we have a list of which Afghans we were going to evacuate? Did we have a plan to get Americans from all over Afghanistan to Kabul and out in an orderly way? How meticulous was the planning for the Trump administration declared May 1st withdrawal?
Well, thank you, Congressman. We inherited a deadline. We did not inherit a plan.
So, nope.
I love how they're laughing now. Well, this is interesting, isn't it? I'm a congressman. I mean, I know some Americans died, but let's chuckle about this for a little bit. I know there's Americans left behind that are going to probably die, but let's just chuckle. So you're telling me, this is the Trump administration's fault. Yeah, this is funny, isn't it? People being dragged from their houses, shot in the head, beaten, dismembered, fingernails pulled off. Drills being used on their arms, legs, and hands. Yeah, funny stuff.
No plan at all. It's amazing that it wasn't much, much worse.
It's amazing that it wasn't much, much worse. There's the narrative, folks. All right, let's go out and say we did an amazing job. Let's go out and claim during this House committee hearing that the Trump administration did not leave a plan for withdrawal from Afghanistan. We inherited a deadline. We did not inherit a plan, he said during this Foreign Affairs Committee hearing. Let's laugh about it. Man, it's just this botched Afghan withdrawal had nothing to do with Joe Biden, had nothing to do with you guys. This is all Trump's fault. Okay, let's fact check it. Is it true or false that the Trump administration didn't leave a plan? Verdict? False. Former Trump Pentagon Chief of Staff Patel has said on the record, in fact, even wrote an op-ed, that he handed over the Biden administration a withdrawal plan, handed over the Trump administration's withdrawal plan to the Biden transition team, in fact, before he was even the president. Quote, we handed our entire plan to the incoming Biden administration during the lengthy transition. The new team simply wasn't interested. That's what Patel wrote in the New York Post column. He also said, I'm intimately familiar with former President Donald Trump's Afghan strategy. In November 2020, I was named Chief of Staff at the Pentagon, where one of my primary responsibilities was to wind down the forever war in Afghanistan. Trump instructed me to arrange a conditions-based, remember those words, write it down, tell your friends about it. The Trump plan was a conditions-based, methodical exit plan that would preserve the national interest. The plan ended up being fairly simple. Here is the plan that they gave to the Biden administration. The Biden administration said, we don't want to hear anything about it. Leave us alone. Ready for this? The Afghan government and the Taliban were both told they would face the full force of the U.S. military if they caused any harm to Americans or American interests in Afghanistan. That was first and foremost part of the conditions-based plan to withdraw. You want us out of here, then while we're getting out of here, you, the Afghan government, and you, the Taliban, are both on notice. You will face the full force of the U.S. military if you cause any harm to a single American or American interest, meaning the translators, those that helped us, anybody else in Afghanistan. Okay? That was number one of the Trump administration. And they took it seriously. And the proof of it is, for 18 months, we didn't have a single American killed in Afghanistan under their leadership. So they understood strength. They understood power. They understood the threat. They understood that Donald Trump wasn't joking. They understood that Donald Trump would blow the hell out of all of them if they screwed with any of us while we were exiting. Condition number two, both parties, the Taliban and the Afghan government, would negotiate to create an interim joint government. And both sides had to repudiate Al-Qaeda the entire time. Third condition of this condition-based plan that the Trump administration was in the process of doing. This was already happening when Joe Biden became president. It was this, and tell everybody about this. A small special operation force would be stationed in the country to take direct action against any terrorist threats that arose. So the idea that we were going to get every American out and that we weren't going to have any presence in Afghanistan is also a lie of this administration. The Trump plan was to always keep a special operations force, quote, small, to be stationed in the country to take direct action against any terrorist threat that arose. Only when all those, and I'll say it again, only when all those conditions were met, along with other cascading conditions, then a withdrawal could and did begin. We successfully executed that plan, the Trump team said, until January the 20th, when Joe Biden became president. During that time, there were no U.S. casualties in Afghanistan while we were rolling the plan out. The president of the country and the Taliban understood that Donald Trump would blow them to hell if they screwed with any Americans or our assets. The president and the Taliban also conducted multiple rounds of negotiations, which is exactly what the conditions-based plan called for. And Al-Qaeda was 100% sidelined in the country because the Taliban, it was in their interest to keep Al-Qaeda at bay, and it was the interest of the government in Afghanistan to keep the Taliban sidelined. The outcome, the result, under the Trump plan, was a successful drawdown of U.S. forces in Afghanistan all the way down to 2,500. That is the lowest count since the dawn of the war on terror. Back to the lie. Patel wrote that everything changed when Donald Trump declared forces would leave by September the 11th, 2021, an arbitrary date that he chose because he wanted to grandstand on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and say, I'm the one that got us out. They abandoned us having the small special operations force that would be stationed in the country to take direct action against any terrorist threat that arose. They abandoned that. In fact, Patel wrote, we handed our entire plan to the incoming Biden administration during the lengthy transition. The new team, the Biden team, simply wasn't interested. Joe Biden changed everything. They didn't follow the plan of the Trump plan. They made their own. And their new plan did not have a condition, did not have conditions for the withdrawal or continued adherence to the agreed upon stipulation that no American would be harmed. It would be an unconditional pullout, meaning no matter what happens on the ground, we're going to pull out. No matter how many Americans are left behind, we're going to pull out. No matter how many Americans are trapped or held hostage, which is exactly what they are now, they're being held hostage, would stop the pullout date or change the pullout date because it was an arbitrary date based on pure symbolism. I'm the one that got us out by the 20th anniversary. Pat me on the back. That's my legacy. I'm Joe Biden. I'm brilliant. Now, let's also remind you that Patel served as deputy assistant to the president for counterterrorism. This guy knows his stuff. This goes hand in hand with what you just heard a moment ago from Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. Quote, it would be an unconditional pullout with an arbitrary date based purely on symbolism and set in stone. Patel added, who also served in the counterterrorism world for decades. No one should have been the slightest bit surprised that when relieved, meaning the Taliban relieved and the Afghan government relieved of any conditions or obligations, that the Taliban could and immediately would overrun the entire country in the absence of U.S. military power, especially after we gave up Bagram Air Base. Patel also said that the plans for removing Americans, as well as equipment and machinery, as well as other contingencies for getting Americans out was also handed to the Biden administration. But they basically threw it out the window and fast-forwarded 6, 7, 8 months because they were obsessed with the date of September the 11th saying we were out. In addition to that, a former senior defense official said that then Defense Secretary nominee Lloyd Austin even rejected meeting with the Trump's outgoing acting defense secretary Christopher Miller, former Green Beret and counterterrorism official, who had at the time just returned from Afghanistan in December to see everything on the ground. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said, nah, I ain't meeting. Austin, quote, refused to meet with Miller or even have a discussion with him regarding the transition or anything else. Pure arrogance of the Biden administration, who they chose to run our military. Quote, It's impossible to say, hard to say, that we didn't even leave them a plan when they refused to even meet or discuss the plan, a plan that was successful and a plan that allowed for no Americans to be killed for 18 months. So I'll say it again. When Anthony Blinken sits there in front of the Senate and the House and says we had no plan, he is an absolute liar. When he says they weren't given a plan, he's a liar. When he says that we didn't have plans to get the equipment out, he's a liar. When he says we didn't have plans to get the people out, he's a liar. When he says we didn't have plans to keep Bagram Air Base, he's a liar. When he says we didn't have plans to keep Americans behind to protect against terrorists, he's a liar. Don't buy any of the crap they're selling you. It's all a lie. And we have the proof to back it up. I hope every one of you that's hearing this right now will help us spread this information and get the real word out there about the lies of Anthony Blinken. Make sure you hit that little arrow button and share this podcast on social media. You can share it on all the different platforms. Make sure you tell your family and friends about this podcast. Thank you for helping us grow. We were one of the top 20 podcasts in politics yesterday, all because of you. So thank you for that. Keep it up. We'll see you back here tomorrow.